thus Remut the son of Seers. And they had sacrificed upon the roof that was sprinkled with holy water, and had carried up 4 jugs of wine and 12 loaves of bread, as well as porridge made of curds and honey, up to the table of the Lord, and had strewn salt. Then they had strewn spices upon the stands for the incense, and slaughtered the sheep. The offerant held it, the priest slew it, and due offering was made. Very charming it had been to see the old man, Remut, in the blamelessness of his limbs, perform the final dance before the altar, and leap disposedly. Laban and his spouse could not say enough in praise to Jacob, who listened in silence and concealed impatience for the verdict. Yes, the verdict, the judgment of the oil. It had been rather dark and equivocal. One was not much wiser having it than before. It sounded both auspicious and threatening. But thus, perhaps, must the future sound, if it speak at all. And it had spoken. At least they had heard a humming, as though through shut teeth. Rimani Bell had taken the cedar staff and the bowl, had prayed and sung and poured oil on water, as well as water on oil, and observed the pictures made with the oil, with his head on one side. 2 rings had come out of the oil, one large and one small, indicating that Rachel, the sheep breeder's daughter, would probably bear a son. Out of the oil, when shaken, a ring had come on the east and had remained. The woman in travail would recover her health. Out of the oil, when shaken, a bubble had come. Her protecting deity would stand by her in her hour of need, for it would be hard. The creature would escape out of its need, for the oil had sunk and risen when water was poured in. It had divided and joined again. Thus the creature, though after sore suffering, would become whole. But since the oil, when water was poured, had gone down and then come up again and clung round the edge of the bowl, so indeed the ailing would arise, but the healthy belonged to death. "But not the boy!" Jacob could not refrain from crying out. No, for the child there seemed to be a reverse process, according to the oil, but just here the matter became unclear to human understanding. The child would go down into the pit, yet still live. It would be like the seed corn that bears no fruit save it die. This, Remut assured them, was unquestionably the meaning of the oil in parting when he poured in water, and then joining again, and glistening peculiarly on the side towards the sun, for this signified the lifting up of the head from death. It was not very clear, the soothsayer had said. He himself did not understand it. He would not pretend to be wiser than he was. But whatever it meant, it was reliable. But with respect to the woman, she would not see, according to the testing and the counter-testing, the star of her son when it stood at its highest. Let her then beware of the number 2, for it was in any case an unlucky number, but in especial for the daughter of the sheep-breeder, and according to the oil, she should undertake no journey in the figure 2, else she would be like an army that reacheth not the head of the field. Thus the speech and the muttering. Jacob heard it and nodded his head, at the same time shrugging his shoulders. What was to be said to it? It was of some weight, having reference to Rachel and her child, but after all, one must rely on oneself and leave to the future to make what it would out of its mutterings. Destiny and the future kept to themselves a free hand. Much might happen and not happen, and it would always be possible to make it fit the prophecy afterwards and say, "So that was what it meant." Jacob mused for several hours over the nature of oracles in general, and talked about it to Laban, who was not receptive. Was an oracle, by its nature, the revelation of a future in which nothing could be altered? Or was it like an admonishment to caution, and a warning to human beings to do their part, that a threatened misfortune might not happen? That presupposed that the destiny and the decree were not fixed, that it was given to men to alter them. But if this were the case, then the future did not lie outside of man, but within him. And how then could one read it? Moreover, it had often happened that the misfortune that had been announced had been prevented by appropriate measures, or even without these measures could not have happened, which reduced both destiny and warning to a mockery and the sport of demons. The oil had said that Rachel would, after hard labor, be delivered of a son. But if she were neglected while in labor, if no incantations were said, the necessary anointings not carried out, how then would destiny act to bring about the fulfillment of its prophecy? But then, was it not sinful to try to bring in a good end, contrary to destiny? Laban had no use for such quibbling. It was ill-considered, he said, tortuous, over-refined, and carping. The future was the future. That was to say, it was not yet, and so was not fixed. But it would one day be, and then it would be so-and-so. Thus it was in a certain way fixed, that is, according to its property as future, and that was all there was to say about it. Yet judgments about it were enlightening and edifying to the heart, and these soothsayers were hired and paid to dispense them, and they studied for years under the protection of the king of the four regions at Babel-Sippar, on both sides of the river Euphrates, favorite of Shamash and beloved of Marduk, the king of Sumeria and Akkadia, who dwelt there in a palace whose foundations were fathoms deep and in a throne room of unnameable splendors. Therefore, Jacob was not to carp. Jacob had already fallen silent. Against Nimrod of Babel, he cherished in his heart a profound suspicion, inherited from the original wanderer. It did not make the pronouncement he had heard any the holier that Laban invoked that mightiness in its favor, or that his father-in-law would never lift a finger without taking a soothsayer's advice. Laban had paid for the judgment with a sheep and all sorts of edibles for the moon idol, and just on this account would be bound to rely on what he heard. Jacob, who had not paid, took a more detached view, but he on his side was pleased to have heard something without paying for it. And as for the future, at least in one point it was already settled. Whether Rachel's child was a boy or a girl, the decision had already been made in her womb. Only one could not see it. There was such a thing, then, as a fixed future. And it was strengthening to the faith, after all, that Rimani Bell's oil had pointed to a boy. And also Jacob was grateful for the practical advice which the prophet had given, for, as a priest and temple incumbent, he had some knowledge of healing, and had not been sparing, though there seemed to be a contradiction here as between his two characters, since no healing could be any good against the future, of advice and counsel for the accouchement, mingling charms and invocations with medical prescriptions in a most edifying manner. It went hard with little Rachel. Long before her hour, that came so near to being her last one, the treatments began. She had to drink bad-tasting draughts, for instance, a great deal of oil in which was pounded up a stone efficacious in pregnancies. She had to wear poultices of bitumen, swine's fat, fish, and herbs. Yes, whole pieces of unclean animals, which, like the poultices, were bound upon her body with cords. When she slept, a kid offering was always at her head, that the greedy demons might take it and leave her alone. Near her by day and night there stood a clay doll in the image of the swamp-born Lamashtu, in its mouth the heart of a suckling pig, which was meant to lure away the demons from the body of the pregnant one into the image. Every 3 days one smashed it with a sword and buried it in the corner of the wall, meanwhile taking care not to look behind one. The sword was thrust in a brazier of burning coals, which Rachel had to have beside her, although the season was already very warm, and they were near the month of Tammuz. Her bed was surrounded by a little wall of pap, and the 3 heaps of grain in her chamber were likewise put there by direction of Rimani Bell. When the first pains began, they hastened to smear the sides of the bed with the blood of a suckling pig, and the house door with plaster and bitumen. The birth. It was summer. The month of Tammuz, master of the herds, the mangled one, was already advanced some days. Since the great moment when he knew that his true and most beloved wife was expectant, Jacob had never stirred from her side. He had shared with his own hands in her care and treatment, renewing the bandages and ointments, and even once smashing and burying the image of Lamashtu. Treatments and practices which were not commanded by the God of his fathers, but above and beyond all the idols and soothsayers, might come from him after all, and in any case were the only ones there were to follow. Rachel, pale and wasted, heavy only in the body, where her fruit, insensate and pitiless, sucked up all her strength and her juices to its own advantage, would often carry his hands to where he might feel the muffled movements, and he would speak to Dumuzi through the fleshly veil, and tell him to take heart and come forth into the daylight, but in so doing to take care how he climbed over the hills, that the dear shepherdess might anguish as little as possible. And now, when she gave a wry little smile, and said short-windedly that she felt it near, he fell into great excitement, called her parents and the maids, told them to make ready the bricks, and bustled aimlessly to and fro, his heart great with supplications. No praise could be too great for the readiness and courage which Rachel displayed. Valiantly, joyously resolved to bear and to endure greatly, she entered upon the work of nature, and this not for the sake of increased outward respect, nor because she would now no longer be the childless and unloved wife of the popular phrase, but out of a much deeper, a more physical sense of honor. For not only human society has its sense of honor, the flesh knows one too, and a better one, as Rachel learned when, scatheless and for honor's sake, she became a mother through Bilhah. The smile she wore when her trial began was other than that bewildered one which the painful conscience of her flesh had then painted upon her face. The lovely, short-sighted eyes, alight with happiness, rested in Jacob's eyes, to whom she should now bear a child in honor. This was the hour to which, in open-eyed readiness for life, she had looked forward when the stranger, the cousin from afar, had first stood before her in the fields. Poor Rachel! So glad she was, so full of good will for the work of nature. And nature showed her so little good will in turn, made it so hard for the brave sufferer. Impatient for motherhood as she had been, sincerely convinced of her gift and aptitude, Rachel was probably in the flesh much less made for maternity than Leah the unloved, so that the sword of death hovered over her when she was brought to bed. And even at the second time, it fell upon and slew her. Can nature so strive against herself, so mock the confidence and proud desire which she herself has implanted in the heart? It seems so. For Rachel's joyousness was not acceptable. Her trust was given the lie. Such was the lot that fell to her ready and willing heart. 7 years had she and Jacob waited in hope, and then for 13 more been incomprehensibly disappointed. And now, when nature had at last and finally granted the longed-for boon, she asked a harsher price than Leah, Zilpah, and Bilhah together had paid for all their maternal honors. 36 hours, from midnight to midday, and again through a whole night to the next middle day, the frightful labor went on. And had it lasted even an hour or a half-hour more, it would have left her breathless. Even at the beginning, Jacob grieved to see her disappointment, for she had dreamed of a swift, triumphant finish, and now nothing stirred. The first indications proved deceptive. Long pauses supervened after the early pains, empty, silent, and fruitless hours in which she did not suffer, but felt weary and ashamed. Often she said to Leah, "With thee, sister, it was another matter," and Leah had to admit, with a quick glance at her husband, that this was so. Then anguish would seize upon the sufferer, crueler and longer each time. Yet when it passed, seemed to have been all in vain. She went from bricks to bed, and from bed to bricks. The hours, the night watches, the times of the day came and went. She blushed and groaned for her unableness. Rachel shrieked not when her pains took her and would not let her go. She bit her teeth together and obstinately did her part. She would not frighten her lord, whose soft heart she well knew, and who in the pauses of exhaustion kissed her hands and feet in the distraction of his soul. Her fortitude helped not at all. It was rejected. And after it was exhausted, she shrieked indeed, wild and frenziedly, so that one would not have known her for the little Rachel. For at this time, the second morning had then come, she was no longer in her senses. One could tell it by the hideous yowling, for the voice was no longer hers. It was the demon's yelling, and the sucking pig's heart had had no power to lure them away from her body into the puppet. They were unavailing pangs that merely held the precious sufferer in a gripe of relentless torture, so that the shrieking mask that was her face went blue, and her fingers clutched the air. Jacob ran through house and court, knocking against everything, since he had his thumbs in his ears and his eight other fingers before his eyes. He called on God, no longer for a son, he had no longer any thought of him, but only that Rachel might have a peaceful death, and lie quiet and released from these hellish torments. Laban and Adinah, whose drafts and anointings and strokings had borne no fruit, in deep dejection muttered invocations, and amid the shrieks chanted prayers to Sin, the moon god, reminding him how once he had sustained a cow in labor, and might now so untie the knots of this woman's body and aid the pangs of the sufferer. Leah stood bolt upright in a corner of the room, her arms at her sides, hands lifted at the wrists, and gazed silently with her squinting blue eyes at this life-and-death struggle of Jacob's beloved. And then came forth out of Rachel a final shriek, the last furious demonic yell, such as one cannot twice shriek without dying, and not twice hear without losing one's mind. And then Laban's wife had something else to do than chant about Sin's cow, for Jacob's son had issued forth, his 11th and his 1st, issued out of the dark and bleeding womb of life. Damuzi Absu, true son of the abyss. It was Bilhah, mother of Dan and Naphtali, who came running, white-faced and laughing, out to the court whither Jacob had rushed, and with flattering tongue announced to the master that unto us a child is born, and unto us a son is given, and that Rachel liveth. And trembling in every limb, he dragged himself to the bed, fell down beside it, and wept. She was covered with sweat, transfigured as by the hand of death, and she was singing in breathless exhaustion. The gateway of her body was torn. She had bitten through her tongue, and she was weary unto death. Such was the reward of her joyful readiness. She had no strength to turn her head, nor to smile, but she stroked his brow as he knelt beside her, and her eyes went towards the hanging cradle, in sign that he should see the child was alive, and lay his hand upon his son. The infant had been bathed. It had stopped screaming. It was swaddled and slept. It had smooth black hair upon its little head that in issuing had torn the mother, long lashes and tiny hands with well-shaped nails. It was not then beautiful. One cannot speak of beauty in so young a child. And yet Jacob saw, as he had not seen in Leah's children, nor observed in the sons of the maids, saw at first glance what filled his heart the longer he looked, full to overflowing with reverent rapture. There was about this newborn babe something ineffable, a clear shining loveliness, equability, sympathy, divine charm, of which Jacob, if not to understand, yet thought to recognize the essence. He laid his hand on the child and said, "My son." But as he touched it, it opened its eyes, which then were blue, and reflected the radiance of its birthday sun shining high in the heavens. With its tiny, strangely complete little hand, it laid hold on Jacob's finger, holding it in a gentle clasp as it fell asleep. Rachel, the mother, slept too, a profound slumber. But Jacob stood there, bent, a prisoner to his tender feeling, and gazed upon the brightness of his little son, perhaps an hour, until it nestled and whimpered for its food, and Jacob lifted it over. They called the boy Joseph, which being interpreted means increase, as when we name our sons Augustus. His whole name, with God, was Joseph El, or Joseph Yah, but liking to think that the first syllable also had reference to the Most High, they spoke to him as Jehoseph.